Hi, Patrick Madrid here. Thanks for listening. Check out Charity Mobile and prayerfully consider making them your wireless carrier. Mention offer code Patrick and get a free phone. Go to charitymobile.com.
Compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Good morning and welcome to the Patrick Madrid Show. I hope you had a wonderful weekend, and I want to thank you from the bottom of my heart, and I think I can speak for everybody here at Relevant Radio. Thank you so much for what turned out to be a truly amazing pledge drive that we had last week. Pledge drive is over, so you're not going to hear me doing pledge drive stuff. But it was hugely successful, thanks to God's grace and to your generosity. So if you participated in Pledge Drive by making a pledge, thank you. We're deeply grateful, and we will not forget you in our prayers. I promise you that. If you didn't have a chance because you were traveling or ill or taking care of kids or whatever it may have been, and you're thinking, oh, yeah, that's right, I want to get in on that, you still can. The door is still being held open for the next day or two. So just go to relevantradio.com and make a pledge if you weren't able to make it before. Same is true for the Relevant Radio app. And as a matter of fact, you can still call 877-291-0123. But that's it. Just thank you so much. And we thank the Lord that we made our goal. I will have some more exact figures for you later in the show today. But we surpassed our goal, our need of $3 million. And that means that we get to keep the lights turned on for the next 3 months. And we're all really excited about that. Also, I want to encourage you to take your Lent to the next level. Lent is starting soon, as you know. Take it to the next level with Father Rocky's Lenten Lessons on the Mass, which is free every single day. And just judging on the way we, the success or the response that we had for last year's walk through the Mass that Father Rocky produced for you, we thought this would be even better, or at least more of the same. So it's got exclusive video content every day that will help enrich your passion for the Holy Mass. It is a premium edition video series. It goes even deeper behind the scenes from the moment you enter the chapel to the final blessing after Mass. From Ash Wednesday to Easter morning, you can illuminate your Lent with daily insights that you will only find here right in your mailbox. So sign up for Father Rocky's new Lenten Lessons on the Mass. Do it now. If you're like me, you'll say, yeah, I need to do that, and then forget about it. Happens to me all the time. So if you're on the app or if you go to relevantradio.com, you can do that. Just sign up for it. And as Father Rocky likes to say, get ready to learn it, live it, love it even more. Oh, Cyrus, what a week. In some ways, it seemed to go by very slowly. In other ways, it seemed to just fly by the way pledge drives sometimes do.
Yeah, and, generous outpouring of support. It's humbling.
It really is. That's a great way to put it. It's humbling. The confidence and the generosity that people place in Relevant Radio, it's truly awe-inspiring. So I'm feeling the afterglow of the pledge drive. It was just really great. And you've heard a ton of stuff also because people who call in or share their testimonies by emails, you see and hear those things as well. So I'm sure you've enjoyed the reaction that many people had this past week.
Yeah, it's phenomenal. And as a little bonus, we have the record.
I know. You want to tell people about that?
You tell them. You
want to brag?
You tell them.
You can humble brag.
So on Thursday, during the Patrick Madrid show, we had the largest number. The Patrick Madrid fans flocked to the phones and to the internet, and we now have the record. We have beat the great Drew Mariani, at least for now.
For now. I really didn't think we'd hold that record very long.
I thought we'd have it for 5 hours.
Yeah.
I really did. And he came close. He came within like five pledges.
I think it was closer to 50, wasn't it?
Was it 50? Oh,
I think it was about 50.
You know, yeah, that's right. They updated the numbers. That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
But it was
so close. It was very close.
And if I recall, the record that he previously held, and he was setting new records all the time, but the record that we broke was not only for the most people who made a pledge during that particular hour, but the number of pledges, the total dollar amount for
right.
pledges. So it's sort of like a double record.
Yeah.
And we'll see if that stands next time around.
Quite honestly, that was way more exciting to me than the Super Bowl.
It was Did so you much watch more, it?
No, I didn't. No. No,
really?
I looked at...
I'm surprised.
I actually happened to turn it on right at the end. So I saw the very last drive of the Bengals. So I watched 3 minutes, 3 minutes of the game.
Nancy and I watched it. We don't see that many football games, you know, maybe one or two a year, but we did watch it. We sat down, watched the very beginning. I thought the game was great. I was rooting for the Rams, my home team, my hometown team. I'm from Southern California, so I couldn't help but root for the Rams. I'm sure that everybody around me was rooting for the Bengals, but I was pleased with the results. And we turned the halftime off, though. Like Nancy said, let's just see what it's going to be. And I'm thinking to myself, it's never good. Every halftime lately at the Super Bowl is
yeah, raunchy. But this one was Snoop Dogg and Dr. Dre. Isn't this your bag, right?
No. I know who they are, and I couldn't tell you like a song.
Do you not
that
know
any
who
of them
Snoop Dogg
did.
Is?
Yeah, I mean, I'm aware of them as people, as human beings, but I couldn't say, oh, that's a Snoop Dogg song or that's a Dr. Dre song. But honestly, it didn't take long. I mean, we watched maybe part of the first number, but then I'm telling you, I'm glad you missed it because it just turned into, and this is a family show, so I can't really say it.
Oh, I saw the same thing. I know exactly.
It became pornographic.
Right. I was watching the ball drop on New Year's Eve with my kids, and we're flipping back and forth through the major networks. This isn't cable. I'm watching regular television,
yep.
And it was the same thing. I was like, "What is this? Is gross."
Yeah,
I'm trying to watch this with my kids, and it's like, well, let's watch. Let's. I'll just look at it on my phone.
I sure hope the kids were not watching the halftime show yesterday.
No.
And it's not me complaining. It's not the old guy shouting, get off my lawn. I'm not complaining about, you know, the musical genre of hip hop and rap. I mean, that's not my thing. I don't like it. You know, there are things about it that I think are really problematic, like, you know, the hyperviolence and anti-police messages and stuff like that. But all of that aside, I mean, I'm not criticizing the genre or the people who like the genre. Fair enough. It just turned pornographic very quickly, and it was very sudden. And, of course, the people were cheering, and it was almost like being back in the amphitheater in Rome as people were being led out to be eaten by lions. I realized none of that happened, but it was the same kind of, like, reveling in something that I think in past generations there would have been fines had a network aired the things that they showed yesterday. And I realize, I know it sounds like a stick in the mud, but so anyway, we turned it off and then we turned it back on again when halftime was over. I don't really feel like we missed anything of value. We did see some of the commercials were pretty funny, and that's always a treat is to see the Super Bowl commercials, but I can't help but remember something that Mike Kendall said last week. And that was that the price of 30 seconds for a commercial yesterday on the Super Bowl, the going rate was $6.5 million for 30 seconds. Boy, did that go by quickly. And to keep Relevant Radio fully funded during the pledge drive was less than half of that, $3 million for a whole quarter. So just kind of put things into perspective.
And that's
honestly
just the price of the 30 seconds. So if you've, mm-hmm. I know Jim Carrey reprised his cable guy role for one commercial.
I saw that.
And so that... You have to. I'm sure
how
he
much
got
did he
paid.
Get paid for that?
I have no idea. I'll see if I can find it. I'll see it.
Maybe he's.
That's interesting.
Well, if he got paid a whole ton of money, maybe Jim Carrey didn't get a chance to participate in our pledge drive last week, but there's still time if Jim Carrey wanted to shave off a couple million dollars from that payday.
Tax deductible, Jim.
I'll bet you he got more than $500 for that appearance.
Yeah,
I'm willing to bet you any amount.
I will not take that bet.
Speaking of generosity, I love this story. Now, this is related to another sporting event, the 2019 Tokyo Olympics, when I became aware of this story, it just brought a smile to my face. A Polish javelin thrower, she won the silver in the Tokyo Olympics in 2019. She found out there was a baby in Poland who needed a heart surgery that would save her life, and she had to come to the U.S. to get it. So this lady, she's 25 years old, Maria Andrzejczyk, she announced on Facebook that she was going to sell her Olympic silver medal to raise funds for the eight-month-old child. Now, the little baby's name is Miłosek Maliusa. So let's just call her Miłosek. And I looked that up, by the way, Cyrus. Miłosek in Polish means love or somebody who loves. Isn't that a sweet name for a little girl?
That's really nice.
Miłosek. And so she did indeed sell her, I'm tripping over my words here. I'm sorry about that. She sold her Olympic silver medal and she made $125,000 from it in order to fund this little girl and her family to go to California. She underwent the surgery. It saved her life. And the kicker to the story is that the winner of this auction allowed her to keep the medal, allowed the athlete to keep the medal.
That's awesome.
Yeah, here's an article in the New York Post. The altruistic athlete, a cancer survivor herself, who didn't know the infant, wrote that she acted after reading his parents' pleas online. Miłosek has a serious heart defect and needs an operation, she wrote in Polish. He also, and I said she, I apologize, it's a he. He also has support from above, a boy who did not make it on time. And it's referring to another little boy who died because he didn't get the operation in time. And she said, but wonderful people decided to donate his funds to help Miłosek. And this is how I want to help too. It is for him that I'm auctioning off my Olympic silver medal. She wrote that Miłosek needed 1.5 million zlotys, about $385,000 U.S., to cover the cost of his transportation to the U.S. and the operation. She wrote that half the amount had already been raised by a family fundraiser and that her goal, along with the mom, is to raise the other half through the auctioning of her Olympic medal. She came in fourth in the 2016 Rio Olympics. She was diagnosed in 2018 with a form of cancer in the cell that... the cells that form bones. She required surgery, though not chemotherapy, and she was able to resume training for the Tokyo Olympics, where she won the silver. And that was for the 64.61 meters javelin throw. And she was only barely beaten by China's gold medal winner, who got a 66.34 meter throw. Ms. Andrzejczyk says, the true value of a medal always remains in the heart. A medal is only an object, but it can be of great value to others. This silver can save lives instead of collecting dust in a closet. That is why I decided to auction it off to help sick children. Super cool, man, if you ask me.
Awesome. I love it.
And it ties in nicely with what Jesus said about laying up treasure in heaven. I mean, it's nice to have an Olympic medal. I've never had one. Can you believe that, Cyrus? I've never won a medal in the Olympics.
What? There's no taco medals?
There should be. I might be a contender. If there were a taco-related event, I could have been a contender. And all the young people have no idea. No, seriously, though. I know it's hard to believe, but I've never won an Olympic medal. Not even once. But I'm inspired to say, if I had, I would think that I would donate it. But see, a lot of people think, yeah, if I had $1 million, what would I do to benefit poor people or how would I help other people? And then when people actually have the money, very often those ideas never really materialize. But in her case, it did. And I do believe it's a great connection with what Jesus said about laying up treasure in heaven. Because although having a gold medal or a silver medal from the Olympics is cool, and you can show your kids and your grandkids, eventually no one's even going to remember. First of all, they're not even going to remember that you were in the Olympics 40, 50 years from now. And 40, 50 years from now, if we're still here, if we haven't all gone to heaven in the meantime, people will barely even remember that there was an Olympics in Tokyo in 2019. It just fades into the past. And yet, doing what she did is a great way to lay up treasure in heaven. So I like that. I thought this was funny too, Cyrus. By the way, my number is 888-914-9149. That's the number to be on the program. Keep in mind, this is not Pledge Drive. So it's a regular show. I'd love to talk to you. I'm here for you. If you need a second opinion or have a question or comment, this would be the place to come. 888-914-9149. I thought this was funny. I couldn't help but laugh, but I was not laughing at, how can I put this? I'm not laughing at somebody's misfortune, I guess is the best way I could put this. And I remember when I showed it to you, you had the same reaction. You couldn't help but chuckle about this. So this is going back into 1957. There was a Hall of Fame, not NBA, Hall of Fame pro baseball player. His name was Richie Ashburn, and he was at bat. This is August 17th, 1957, in Philadelphia, and it was a game against the New York Giants. He was a Yankees player, and he hit a foul ball, and it struck a woman in the stands, in the grandstands. Her name is Alice Roth. It struck her right in the face, broke her nose, and then the game paused. Try to picture the scenario. The game pauses while they attend to Ms. Roth.
Yeah, poor lady.
I know, right in the face. I mean, it broke her nose.
You're supposed to catch with your hands.
Just imagine just realizing at the last minute that foul ball is going to hit me. So she gets hit in the face. Obviously, we're not laughing at that. She gets hit in the face, breaks her nose. The game stops. People rush to her side. The EMTs are taking her away on a stretcher. So they start playing the game again. Ashburn still at bat. He fouls again and hits the same woman again as she's on a stretcher being carried out of the stadium. After the first time he hit it, it hit her in the face and broke her nose. The second foul ball that he hit broke a bone in her knee.
What are the odds?
How does that happen?
That poor woman.
The same woman.
Getting different carried part of the body. Away on a stretcher. This is something you'd see in one of those dumb movies like Airplane or Naked Gun.
Right.
Like, it's just totally ridiculous. There's no way this could ever happen.
And it happened.
Poor woman.
Yeah. I know. And the thing is, she was the wife. This is what makes it all the more odd. She was the wife of a sports editor for the Philadelphia Bulletin who was there covering the game. And she was there with her two grandsons in the stand.
Had he written negative things about that particular ball player?
Not that I'm aware of.
The plot thickens.
But even if Ashburn had wanted to inflict harm, which he obviously didn't. I mean, it's just a freak happenstance. But even if he had wanted to, there's no way he could have made it happen. Now, the article says, this is from Forbes magazine, by the way. Fortunately, this story had a happy ending. The Phillies treated the family royally after the event, and the kids were invited into the clubhouse and given free tickets and an autographed baseball. After that, the kids visited Roth in the hospital, and one reportedly said, "Grandma, do you think you could go to an Eagles game and get hit in the face with a football?" I mean, maybe we'll get the same treatment for the pro football. So I thought that was funny. And I'm not laughing at her misfortune, but you have to admit, it is funny.
Yeah.
So
I'm a bad person for it. It's too crazy to not laugh at.
I agree. Well, time keeps on slipping into the future. So we'll take a break. We'll come back. The phone lines are open. My number is 888-914-9149. 888-914-9149. By the way, the federal government is ramping up an anti-domestic terrorism campaign. And you might be surprised at some of the potential targets for this. I'll share that with you when we come back from this quick timeout. Congratulations, Rams.
It relevant. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. Join the conversation at 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. The Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Right on. Welcome back to the Patrick Madrid Show. All right, plenty of stuff to talk to you about. And if you have something you'd like to talk to me about, here's my number, 888-914-9149. Lines are open right now. So feel free, 888-914-9149. So I'm checking out at DHS.gov, Department of Homeland Security.gov, a new advisory that they have issued within the last few days. And the particular section of it I want to share with you right now is called Summary of Terrorism Threat to U.S. Homeland. Now, I'll begin by saying I am obviously, I think any normal, sane person would be adamantly opposed to terrorism and in favor of doing whatever we can within, you know, moral boundaries to prevent terrorists from committing acts of terror in this country. So I am foursquare in favor of defending ourselves, defending our country, our government, etc. So please don't imagine that I'm either making light of this issue, because terrorism is real, as we know, nor am I suggesting that the United States government should not be busy doing whatever it can to focus on terrorism. But what I found interesting was the kind of terrorism potential that they're looking at now. That's what I thought to be somewhat curious, and I wanted to share that with you. So I'm going to read verbatim from the beginning of this summary, and Cyrus will post it for you so you can read it for yourself. The United States remains in a heightened threat of environment fueled, in a heightened threat environment fueled by several factors, including an online environment filled with false or misleading narratives and conspiracy theories and other forms of mis, dis, and malinformation. They have an acronym for that, MDM. Misinformation, disinformation, and malinformation. And that is, they say, being introduced and or amplified by foreign and domestic threat actors. These threat actors seek to exacerbate societal friction, to sow discord, and undermine public trust in government institutions to encourage unrest, which could potentially inspire acts of violence. I want to pause here for a second. In 2020, didn't we see all across the fruited plain, all across this country, didn't we see unending, continuous acts of public unrest, undermining public trust in government institutions like the police? Cyrus, you remember those things, don't you?
I do.
One violent protest after another. Now, some people say, well, they were mainly not violent. Okay. Many of them were very violent and killed people and injured people and destroyed buildings and businesses and cars and property and even government buildings, for example. So the federal government, the same federal government, I don't know if for sure because they don't exactly identify it, but I sure didn't see a hue and cry being raised in 2020, especially after the murder of George Floyd in May of that year. But just to reread the sentence, actors that seek to exacerbate societal friction, to sow discord and undermine public trust in government institutions and to encourage unrest, which could potentially inspire acts of violence. That sentence, I think, aptly describes a great deal of what we saw in 2020 and forward. Just in terms of, you know, the net results of some of these things were whole city blocks in places like Portland and Seattle and Minneapolis and other cities in this country that were just leveled. It looked like an atom bomb had gone off, just leveled because of the looting and the destruction. And talk about not just unrest, but talk about undermining public trust in government institutions. We saw that wall to wall. Anyway, continuing. Mass casualty attacks and other acts of targeted violence conducted by lone offenders and small groups acting in furtherance of ideological beliefs and or personal grievances pose an ongoing threat to the nation. While the conditions underlying the heightened threat landscape have not significantly changed over the last year, the convergence of the following factors has increased the volatility, unpredictability, and complexity of the threat environment. Number one, the proliferation of false or misleading narratives which sow discord or undermine public trust in U.S. government institutions. I'll pause there. So I have a couple questions. First is, who determines what is quote-unquote misleading? Does CNN determine what's misleading?
Yeah.
Would Fox News determine what is misleading? I don't think so. And define misleading. What does it mean exactly? Oh, I have an example. Okay, tell me if this fits, Cyrus. Planned Parenthood's blatant falsehood about, they claim that just 3% of their services are abortion. Just 3%, that's all.
That's misleading.
That is misleading. I wonder if the federal government would deem that to be misleading, especially since they fund Planned Parenthood to the tune of $500 million a year, don't you know?
What about all the false and misleading narratives that people were canceled for and are now are deemed actually true and it's on the cover of Newsweek? But a year ago, if you said the exact same things.
Oh, like Dr. Lena Wen from CNN, the former queen of Corpse Mountain, the former head of Planned Parenthood. She's been making the rounds.
She is a piece of work.
Well, she's been making the rounds, as you know, for the last couple of months, saying masks, at least the kind that are commonly worn, the cloth masks, she says those don't do anything. Those are just facial decorations. Now, she does say, and she advocates for the use of masks. But even masks now, people are saying, you know, medical doctors and scientists more and more now, and we've quoted any number of them on the program from mainstream legitimate sources, including from the CDC, Johns Hopkins, et cetera. You know, we don't need these masks. Oh, by the way, did you notice on the Super Bowl yesterday, Cyrus? I know you didn't watch it, so you didn't notice it. Nobody was wearing a mask. Nobody. But the school kids in California, they're wearing masks this morning. They're being forced to wear masks this morning. And not a single person in sight at the Super Bowl cavorting and celebrating and breathing all the same air. Nobody was wearing a mask. And that was okay. It's not LA's fault. Unless you're the mayor of LA. Oh, by the way, there were some pictures of Mayor Garcetti hobnobbing at the Super Bowl. No mask. And none of the people he's standing a foot away from talking to, no masks. But the school kids this morning, masks. So to your point, Cyrus, people say a year ago who might question the validity of some of these things would be shouted down and deplatformed.
This is telling me that they're terrorists. That's what I'm reading.
You're reading it right. The proliferation of false or misleading narratives, which sow discord or undermine public trust in U.S. government institutions. So, continuing. Number two, continued calls for violence directed at U.S. critical infrastructure, soft targets and mass gatherings, faith-based institutions such as churches, synagogues, and mosques, institutions of higher education, racial and religious minorities, government facilities and personnel, including law enforcement and the military, the media, and perceived ideological opponents. So I'm all in favor of protecting all of the above named groups. But it's this false or misleading narratives. And this, by the way, that phrase recurs, I don't know, a dozen times maybe in this document. False or misleading narratives. And it remains to be explained who will determine what is false or misleading. And then the third point is caused by foreign terrorist organizations for attacks on the United States based on recent events. The primary terrorism-related threat to the United States, the government says, continues to stem from lone offenders or small cells of individuals who are motivated by a range of foreign and or domestic grievances, often cultivated through the consumption of certain online content. The convergence of violent extremist ideologies, false or misleading narratives, there it is again, and conspiracy theories have and will continue to contribute to a heightened threat of violence in the United States. I want to press pause here. Do you remember in, I don't know, what was it, 2016, 2017? We had a presidential election. You probably remember it. And it was wall to wall for years, this conspiracy theory that Russia had rigged the elections. Remember that, Cyrus?
Hard to forget.
Yeah. Wall to wall on CNN, MSNBC, that was their stock in trade, was, you know, the Russian collusion. It's almost like now the word Russia and collusion go together. Russian collusion, Russian collusion, Russian collusion, that Russia had rigged our voting machines, that Russia had rigged through misinformation on Facebook and other things, and that it wasn't really a real election. It was just rigged. That was a conspiracy theory that ran rampant, much of which was later disproven, but who cares now? But if you have something that I guess maybe the government or whoever else deems to be a conspiracy theory, you just might be in the category of somebody who would perpetrate terrorism. That's how I'm reading this. If you, if somebody doesn't believe in the efficacy of, let's say, masks, to use a simple example, that person seems, based upon what I'm seeing here, to maybe be of interest to the government because it's misleading information. Let's see. By the way, Cyrus, for the record, if I go into a place and they say masks are required, I wear a mask.
Yeah, me too.
You know, I'm not going to say no, I'm not going to wear a mask. I wear a mask. If the business or whatever, like the airport, for example, in and out of the airport, on the airplane, you better wear a mask or they will inflict serious repercussions on you. But I'm cheerfully willing to wear a mask. It's not a hill I'm going to die on. But for some people, for their own reasons, I guess, that's the hill they want to die on. And they, I think, would be considered part of this general vague kind of threat.
Even though the CDC has said that these paper masks that everybody is wearing, that the kids are wearing, the cloth masks and the bandanas that people wear, do nothing.
Well, as Dr. Lena Wen, the former queen of Corpse Mountain, a.k.a. Planned Parenthood, I have something from her right here. CNN medical expert Dr. Lena Wen said that it might be time to lift the mask mandates indefinitely. Not because they don't work or because the threat has passed, but in order to preserve public health authority for when it's needed again. Now, this is from the Daily Wire.
Again.
Yeah, but it's quoting her from CNN. In fact, I think you've got some audio on this, don't you?
Oh, you know what? I might. Let me dig.
Search for it. I'm going to take a few phone calls. Maybe we'll come back to this. So Cyrus is going to post the memo. This is actually a summary of the memo from the U.S. Department of Homeland Security on terrorist threats in the United States. And as you read it, and I encourage you to read it, keep notice of this reoccurring phrase of false or misleading narratives. What constitutes misleading and who decides whether or not something that is said is misleading or not? Misleading means it's not entirely true. Maybe there's some truth to it, but it might lead you to a false conclusion. Who decides that? And that's one thing that's absent from this document. I didn't find it. You know, who the so-called fact checkers are going to be. And who's going to fact check the fact checkers, by the way? So, Cyrus, if you can get me the audio for Dr. Lena Wen, I would like to share the latest. And this is, by the way, from CNN about masks. So we'll get to that as well. Let's go to Kimberly in Pittsfield, Maine. Good morning, Kimberly.
Good morning. I apologize that this doesn't have anything to do with your topic. But
not a problem.
I have been kind of confused. During the war, when Moses had his arms up, he was winning the war. When he had his arms down, he was not winning the war. Now, he received the tablet that said, "Thou shalt not kill." So my question is, why would God condone that? Because mass killing was happening at that point.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think the simple answer is that it wasn't violating the commandment, "Thou shalt not kill," because that commandment, it was against murder. So to intentionally take the life of an innocent person, that's what that commandment is speaking about primarily. Now, there are other subsets of commandments there. So like you couldn't, to ruin somebody's reputation would be a species of an offense against the commandment, "Thou shalt not kill." But in warfare, that is not part of it, because in warfare, you have the right to defend yourself against enemy combatants. And that's what was happening. The Israelites were at war. And so you can read the story, by the way, in Exodus chapter 17. And they're fighting with the Amalekites. And it's a full-scale war with swords and shields, etc. So what was happening there in the case of war was not an offense against the fifth commandment. That's the simple answer.
Okay, perfect.
So to give you an example, let's say during World War II, you know, we had to send our military to Europe and the Pacific to fight against the Germans and the Japanese. and we had to kill a lot of people. But that wasn't murder. That was a justifiable moral act in the case of war. There's a lot that could be said about it, but I mean, if, again, to try to keep it very simple, that's the difference.
I appreciate simple.
Yeah.
Thank you very much too. For your help.
You're welcome, Kimberly. Nice to talk to you. How about Walt in... No, I think we're going... I'm looking at the clock. We have to take a break first. So let's take a break, and we'll come back. And I think maybe Cyrus might have some audio for us on the other side of this quick timeout. The number to call if to be on the program is 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149. This is the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Hey, there's a line open, so now is your opportunity to ask Patrick a question by calling 888-914-9149.
Welcome back to the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. Have a question? Give Patrick a call. 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. Patrick Madrid on Relevant Radio.
All right, we are back. Thanks again. You can call and be on the program with your question or comment. The number is 888-914-9149. So just to return to what we were talking about a few minutes ago, CNN medical expert Dr. Lena Wen, whom you may remember was the head of Planned Parenthood for a while before she was ousted, on CNN saying that it's time to lift the mask mandate. Now, she's not just talking about cloth masks, which she has already gone on record on CNN saying she described cloth masks as facial decorations that don't do anything. And she wasn't referring there to the three-ply paper masks. And her message is not intended to suggest that it's, you know, that masks, in her view at least, that masks are not in some way necessary or that they are in some way effective. But as you're going to hear her say in a minute, she thinks people have, this is my interpretation of what she's saying, she thinks people have basically lost any sense of trust in the government or Dr. Fauci or whoever when the mantra about wearing masks continues and people don't feel as though they work. Now, again, I'm interpreting what she had to say. You interpret it for yourself. She's being interviewed on CNN by Wolf Blitzer.
You say we can start removing at least some coronavirus restrictions. Now, tell us why.
Well, I agree with Colorado, with many other local and state jurisdictions that are beginning to lift government mandates. And I think this is the key. I'm not saying that we should be stopping masking, but rather that this needs to shift from a government requirement to an individual decision. The government can't keep on telling our citizens that this is a five-alarm fire all the time. People are just going to start tuning it out and not pay attention. They'll be desensitized. And so what needs to happen is we need to end the state of emergency and preserve the ability of public health authorities to reinstitute mandates in the future if we see more dangerous variants later.
Yeah.
More in the future. How about that?
Well, I had the same reaction. And you notice I posted something on Twitter yesterday. So the New York Post has this article. The headline says, "Future COVID variants could be more deadly, scientists warn." And take a look at it. It's on Twitter. I said, stick a fork in it, guys. And I drew an arrow to the ratio. And you know what a ratio is on Twitter, right? Where the number of people commenting, typically mocking or jeering at what was posted, when that number is so much greater, so much higher than the number of people who like the article, that's when you're getting ratioed. So if you look at this, you'll see, this is as of, you know, a day ago, it had 249 likes, it had 924 comments, and if you look at the comments, you see that it was all mockery, much of it anyway. Future COVID variants could be more deadly, scientists warn, and that's what Lena Wen is talking about. People are basically like, just shut up, you know, stop telling us this over and over again. Now, I disagree with her on many things. She's a medical doctor and I'm not, so I don't have the medical expertise to weigh in on a medical issue. But just from a sociological standpoint, even though I disagree with her on many things, I do agree with her when she said people are just going to start tuning out and not pay attention. They'll be desensitized. A whole swath of our population has already done that and did it a long time ago. But as evidenced by the Super Bowl, I mean, look at Mayor Garcetti from Los Angeles. Nary a mask to be seen on his face. And this is true not only for all of the glitterati who were there enjoying the game. That's a great song. Hey, do you know the LA Rams won yesterday? Super Bowl? I love LA. Keep up the pressure. This is Red State's managing editor, Jennifer Van Laar, says, keep up the pressure, y'all. By the way, whenever I see people say y'all on Twitter, I always cringe. That's not going to age well, I don't think. Also, elect people who will change public health laws, because we can't ever let this blank happen again. A number of officials have rolled back mask mandates in their states, most notably the newly elected Virginia Governor Glenn Youngkin, Republican. Democratic governors Phil Murphy in New Jersey and John Carney in Delaware have also announced a plan to remove school masking requirements in a matter of weeks. Why don't they just, with a stroke of a pen, just say it's done?
This has nothing to do with midterm elections coming up, I'm sure.
Why would you even think such a thing?
It's silly.
I mean, why would you even think that politicians would politic for votes to sway people's opinions?
My bad.
I know. So the Democratic governors aforementioned also are dropping the mask requirement, but why they're going to make the kids wait for weeks, I do not know. This, by the way, prompted a response from White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki. Jen Psaki said that the White House still recommends that children wear masks in school because that was the most recent guidance from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. But she noted...
This drives me so crazy, Patrick. What masks are the kids wearing? They're wearing those little paper ones, the ones the CDC has said don't do anything. So we're all just playing pretend. I walk around, I'm going around the grocery store, and I'm seeing all people wearing bandanas and paper masks that don't do anything. And it's like, oh, we're all just playing pretend. That's
nice. You know what was weird for me? So Nancy and I spent some time in the beautiful Phoenix area. And a great deal of that time was spent in Tempe, which is the home of ASU. And it's a big, bustling college campus, you know, tons of young people there. I'm not kidding, Cyrus. We saw on a constant basis young people, and we're talking like 20, 21, 20, 19-year-old men and women, outside in the bright, beautiful sunshine, by themselves, in the great outdoors, wearing masks. Not near anybody, not in a building. And I think that they have been so conditioned that they have to wear masks wherever they go, they never take them off. And you just see them walking down the street or walking in a park or, you know, out for a ride or something, and they're wearing masks by themselves outside. Very strange. I think you have some audio from Jen Psaki circling back to this topic. Do you have that?
Oh, yeah. You know what? I actually have that right here.
Okay. Sure. So here's the press secretary of the White House press secretary circling back to this issue of, even though you've got lots of governors, Democratic and Republican, now dropping the mask mandates in their states, the White House is reluctant to do so.
Patrick. It's not us. This has been up to the school districts. This isn't Jen Psaki or her boss's fault. All right. And okay.
Back on the mask mandate question in New Jersey and other states, the CDC is still recommending universal masking in schools.
That's correct. And that still remains our recommendation.
So are you pleased with and fine with the New Jersey governor's decision?
Again, our advice to every school district is to abide by public health guidelines. It continues to be at this point that the CDC is advising that masks can delay, reduce transmission. There are also a number of other mitigation measures that we've put in place, but that continues to be CDC guidance. It's always been up to local school districts to determine how they implement.
What does it say then that a governor like Phil Murphy, who's been so closely aligned with the policies of this administration, would get ahead of the medical experts and say, never mind what they say, school districts, you decide?
Well, it's always been up to school districts. That's always been our point of view and always been our policy from here. And our policy from the federal government is to continue to advise everybody to abide by public health guidelines.
Do you think it signals that perhaps the public believes it's time for a change in the federal guidelines, the CDC's guidelines?
Well, we certainly understand and have seen in polling that the public is tired of COVID. We understand that. So are we. And there has been some good signs recently where there has been a decrease in hospitalizations around the country. And again, we're in constant touch about what it looks like moving forward. But our responsibility as the federal government is to rely on the data and the science that is being analyzed by our public health experts. And we'll continue to rely on that for what recommendations we're making.
So, you know, we were talking about misinformation earlier and the new Homeland Security and the terrorist threats of miscommunication and
misleading. Right.
So like when we were blatantly told by Fauci that we'll be totally safe to go out and about if we get a vaccine, right? We will not be able to pass it on.
And then that was back when we had 15 days to flatten the curve.
Oh, that's right. The flatten the curve. I remember that.
That was a diet. When I first started hearing that, I thought flatten the curve meant lose weight.
I did not flatten. During the lockdown.
We were all
stuck in our houses. And then now there's reports that was actually more damaging than if we would have lived life as we normally do.
We covered that on this program at length.
With the Homeland Security rules now, that in itself was that terrorism?
It may have been misleading information. But here's the thing to process what you just said, and I know what you mean by that. The problem is, as I see it, is that the so-called guidance was changing and conflicting, and at times also misleading.
The science is changing. It's just the science is changing, Patrick.
So just to give an example of what I mean. So Dr. Lena Wen, whom we just heard from a minute ago, she's a medical doctor. She's on CNN a lot now. And she herself said that the one kind of mask that was very common for a long time, and the CDC said, yeah, that's fine, you can wear that. She said it was utterly ineffective. The whole time it was ineffective. And so here you have, and if she had, well, maybe not her, but how about a fictitious podcaster, somebody who doesn't exist, but let's just call him Mo Jogan or something like that. Imagine on the Mo Jogan show that he said that masks don't work. Maybe his show, people might have tried to take a show off of, I don't know, like, let's say Potsify, if there were like a music a music platform called Potsify or something. So the Mo Jogan show, they might try to get rid of it because he might have said, I mean, this is entirely fictitious. He doesn't exist. It's not real. But if somebody called Mo Jogan were to say that, and they wanted to get his program off of Potsify, then that would have been, you know, rah-rah, sis, boom, bah. But then if Dr. Lena Wen shows up 6 months later and says the same thing, CNN's talking heads, they nod thoughtfully, and they say, well, thank you for sharing that updated information with us, kind of thing. That's part of the problem, is that people, you know, they say that people are tired of it. I think what people are tired of especially is the conflicting information, the changing information,
the hypocrisy of the
inconsistent,
the political elites.
I have one word to say on that because I know we have to take a break and we're going to take some phone calls too. 888-914-9149. That's the number to call on any topic. We don't have to talk about this. Any topic. This is just in the news yesterday because of the Super Bowl and such. But I'll give you an example, Cyrus. You talk about hypocrisy. So I saw the mayor of Los Angeles. We've seen the governor of the great state of California. We've seen even Dr. Fauci himself at times, who, although on the one hand, they're draconian in their efforts to make other people wear masks, yet they're caught all the time not wearing masks. In the same kind of scenario, like being cheek by jowl with people at the Super Bowl, having a great time. If I had been there, I would have been having a great time. But these people who are so adamant that other people have to wear masks, like the kids in schools, and they're in these super spreader events and not wearing masks, here's my question. They have access to the best cutting edge scientific information, don't they? I mean, You would assume that the governor of California, the mayor of Los Angeles, and others. You know, the Rams won yesterday, Super Bowl. You would think that they would have access to the cutting edge information. And so my theory is, if the best cutting edge scientific medical information were really telling them, listen, if you're going to die if you don't wear that mask, you're going to kill other people if you don't wear that mask, by golly, you bet you they would be wearing the masks because they don't want to die. They've got careers they're looking forward to and, you know, all the emoluments of life. They want to live life and be happy. So this is what makes me convinced that if they really were being told that this will really kill you or kill somebody else, they would be doing it, and they're not doing it, which leads to the question then, well, why aren't they doing it? Draw your own conclusions. I think we're done with the mask thing. Plenty more to talk about, including another example of invalid sacraments because baptism was administered incorrectly. I'll tell you all about that and much more right after this.